is Friday. It's April 15th. It's not tax day for some weird reason. That'll be on the 18th. But anyway, hi, it's John Williams. And we are the Mincing Rascals. Kristen McQuarrie does not join us today, but Scott Stantis is here in her stead, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Scott. We're glad you're here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And also, as always, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio and Eric Zorn, columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, fellas.
Hey, John.
Hello,
John
Williams. You know, McQuarrie is doing TV this morning. She thinks television is better for her than the Mincing Rascals.
Let's face it, we made her.
Popping up on other podcasts, too. Not that I'm keeping score.
I'm keeping score. I'm keeping score, like, very jealous and possessive.
Well, let's see. She's beautiful, young, intelligent, and articulate. I don't know why she wouldn't want to bury herself in a podcast with us.
I'm looking at two other men here who aren't, so.
Hey, my wife likes me.
Let's talk a little bit about the Denny Hastert story. We spent some time talking about it last week. We're still going through a series of hearings and court proceedings, and the judge now has several dozen letters that he said he'll make public, which are, as I understand it, we haven't read them yet, but in favor of Denny Hastert, letters sympathetic, saying that he's either old or he's ill or he didn't do anything else. He served the country admirably, so let's give him a break at sentencing. I wonder if the people who wrote those letters knew that they might be made public and might regret their being made public. Do you know what I mean?
I think that you do know that these letters are going to be public when you write to a judge like that. And my guess is that they're not going to deal with him and his treatment of teenage boys so much as they're going to talk about, well, you know, my house was being foreclosed and Mr. Hastert came in and he swooped in and saved the day and other things, other good works that he's done. And there's no question that in his long life, he must have done many good things. And so those will be the kind of things, the character letters that are going to be there. I don't think people are going to be too embarrassed by them.
Are you guys interested in that? You think that's
sure.
a reasonable consideration? That is, maybe the judge should take that sort of stuff into account.
Why? Well, I mean, No. I'm sorry. I've heard this for the last couple of weeks, and it's making me crazy. It's the same thing from the Catholic pedophile scandal, and it's just following the same arc. There was one guy, and he was paying him off, and it was just one guy. And, you know, who amongst us can't say that we haven't had one crazy love affair with an underage child? And then it turns out, you just know, he's a sexual predator. You know there's more than one. There was. There's now, what, four or five?
Five.
And that's where the number is right now. I will guarantee you and bet my house that that number can go up a lot.
Wait a minute, Mr. Justice. So you're convicting and sentencing a man for charges not only that he hasn't been charged with, but tried for, right? I mean, he's copped to the hush money thing, and now all of a sudden you want to sentence him for being a serial pedophile? I don't think you can
do that. I just
want
to point out also that this house of yours is in Alabama, too.
It's a lovely house with a big pool and a big backyard.
But you're not saying, what are you suggesting?
No one gets shot in my neighborhood.
Bertrand, are you suggesting that that didn't happen? Are you saying, Steve, that maybe those allegations aren't true?
No, I'm not saying that they're not true at all. I'm saying that he hasn't been convicted of them.
This is true. He's innocent
or tried for them. So I have a difficult time understanding how we can just automatically expand our sentence because of these allegations.
He's all but admitted to them, though, right?
I mean, but he's all but admitted. I mean, he gave, as you said last week, a poorly worded apology, right, Eric?
Yes.
I mean, he has not listed the names and said, here's what I did, and I'm sorry I did that. We don't have that
there
from
was
him
a
at all.
There was a suggestion this week in a filing that his lawyers made that was made public that the rubbing that he gave, the rub down that he gave to individual A, was it? One of the lettered
victims. It was A,
victims.
Yeah.
Didn't constitute sexual assault because he was a coach and a trainer.
And
he was just massaging his upper thigh. It was sort of astonishing.
In a hotel room as the only male in the room.
Yeah.
But, you know, it really was so let's call that what it is. You can make your own conclusion. But it was a weird time. Remember, this is a guy who would put a Barca lounger in view of all of the young men in the showers, and nobody said anything. Andy Richter did not say anything. Nobody said anything. They just thought, well, that's what the coach is doing. He wants to make sure we're not fighting or we're showering after practice. Did you guys have coaches or gym teachers who were hung up on making sure everybody showered? And until he saw our naked, wet bodies, he wouldn't hand us a towel. And there was nothing in a, you know, we didn't think twice about it. And in retrospect, there's nothing twice to be thought about it because it was all on the up and up. But that was a different era, I guess. So why am I telling you all of this? I guess I don't know why I'm telling you all of
this. John, do you have something you have to tell us?
No, I don't.
But what do you think? Well, I mean, I think that you have to give this. I mean, this man is old and sick, but I think he has to spend time in prison. And the judge was the judge.
I wish I knew I was telling you all of that, but go ahead. No, he shouldn't go to jail. He shouldn't go to jail.
Yeah, and the government has asked for only 6 months. The judge is signaling that he may be going higher than that. The judge seems like he has very little patience with some of the things that Hastert has been saying and doing before the sentencing, which is coming up again later this month. I'm looking for maybe 2 years, and I think that he has to go to prison because you have to say that you cannot outrun this kind of offense. You have to, you know, no matter how old and sick you are, you have to pay the price. So.
But it's a funny thing because since we really don't even have charges against him, we're still going to punish him. We're going to convict and punish him for those things anyway, right? I mean, if this is the run-of-the-mill sort of...
Well, we do have charges against him, and we have a guilty plea, so you sentence him...
He was being extorted and was, think about that. So really the only thing that he's going to go to jail for is he was being extorted, and the way he was positioning the money is illegal. And when the FBI came to his door, maybe to try and help him from getting extorted, they realized that in fact he is the guy who's committed a crime for which we can't prosecute him. So what we're going to do, though, is take that crime of him being extorted and illegally positioning money, and we're going to punish him as much as we can for something that he's not been convicted of.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's an underlying offense, certainly.
That's, yeah, I know that. And I think we should just be clear about that. I'm okay with it, and if that means 5 years and we feel that's the best we can get, then we all have to move on. But that, I believe that's what's about to happen.
Well, I think we may even raise this last week. When somebody comes to you, as this individual A came to Hastert, was it in 2010 or something like that? It was and said, "I remember this from the 70s, and I want you to pay me some money," or whatever he said. However, that conversation went down, or maybe he said, "I'm going to sue you," and Hastert said, "Well, no, let's settle out of court quietly without a suit being filed," which is perfectly legal, by the way. I'm wondering how that conversation went and why Hastert didn't say, you know, like, "Hey, that was 40 years ago. I don't remember that. I don't remember things that way. You know, see you in court." And I think he might have said that if he didn't know that there were other victims out there. And
right.
Scott's assurance.
Well, would you have played it, Eric? You're just thinking that reasonably he might have said, "No, I'll take my chances in the court of public opinion or a court of law."
I think he might have said, you know, that he might have said, "You don't have a case. It's going to be your 40-year-old memory against my 40-year-old memory of one night in one hotel room. I don't think
more people that would come
but
forward."
He knows. That's why he's $3 million for that incident. That's a lot. You know?
Yeah, especially for a public servant. He's made a lot of money in the private sector since.
Oh yeah.
But that's pretty. And Kristen kind of pointed this out a couple of times last week. This is the man who was 2 breaths from the White House. I mean, maybe it's easy to make too much about that, but he had risen to the pinnacle of American politics and had this secret in his closet.
Not to mention supporting legislation that would sentence serial sexual offenders to life imprisonment.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons, Scott, why he would say, "You know what? Give me a break here. Maybe one of those massages wasn't illegal, and
you know,
maybe."
Do you notice how much we're giggling through this, and I think it's a defensive sort of thing, but it's a little. I mean, I'm doing it too, but just think of it. We're talking about this, and we're just giggling from time to time.
I'm giggling because I'm angry.
I know you are. I wasn't taking you out, too. Yeah, I mean, I've done it, too.
Not,
but
because
it's just such an uncomfortable thing.
It is, Steve.
People who abuse children
Giggling because I'm angry. I've never heard that. I'm going to bet.
No, but it's also just astonishing, isn't it? I mean, really, sometimes you laugh at the absurdity of it all. And this is the damnedest thing I think we've talked about in a really long time.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about some crazy stuff on this podcast. Now, we'll continue to follow this story. Just since we're going down absurd row, can we talk about Mel Reynolds for a second then?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I just giggled.
All right, again, now another sexual predator.
Welcome to Illinois. As we keep it in Illinois. Go ahead, Eric. What's your thought about this story?
The interesting turn this week was that Mel Reynolds was arrested in the Atlanta airport, which struck me as kind of overkill. I guess they confiscated his phone and his computer. He's a couple of days late reporting on these, I think they're misdemeanor tax charges. I mean, they're sort of small-time charges, but the judge is really angry at him. And he says, well, I'm over in Africa. I'm caring
Zambia.
For my, or Zambia. Well, that's in Africa.
Yeah,
and
he, yeah.
And I'm caring for my daughter. She's tragically ill. And then we look on social media and his daughter's jetting around the country, jetting into Europe and talking about doing squat exercises. And it's just story gets stranger and stranger. Mel Reynolds is just one of these completely compellingly bizarre figures.
He does not get it.
I was at the news conference in, it must have been 88 or 90 or something like that, when he was running against Gus Savage for Congress, and he called us together, and there were bullet holes, quote-unquote bullet holes, in his office window. Do you remember that, Eric?
Yeah, and he had a,
and he had a bandage on his forehead.
Band-aid on his head.
Because he was injured by flying glass because supporters of Gus Savage were trying to intimidate him out of the race. And at the time, look, I mean, I was one of them, thought, hey, this is a bright guy, right?
Rhodes Scholar.
Rhodes Scholar. This is the guy who's going to be the great leader out of the south side of Chicago.
Oh, yeah. He was just like Jesse Jackson Jr., who was another one of these people who was supposed to be the coming figure.
Right,
I mean,
right.
anyone thought there was going to be an African-American president?
Boy, we have so many cases of disappointment, don't we? And then Reynolds, convicted in 95, child on charges of criminal sexual abuse, child pornography, and obstruction of justice for having sex with a 16-year-old former campaign intern. And I think that's why the judge or any of us are really impatient with him. I mean, who really cares if he's a day late or if he has to wear an ankle bracelet or if he's going to contest some 4 counts of tax evasion, you know, whatever. But it's this other stuff, I think, that plagues him and our opinion of him.
He doesn't seem to be living in our world. I don't know that he is.
That is so interesting, because if I had any of this history, any kind of criminal history or a cloud over me that might make a judge impatient with me, I would never be late for anything, you know? I don't understand these guys that break the terms of their bond or are late for a court date or something. I don't understand why you want to roll the... And then the judge says, okay, but you better not do that again. And I thought, he just caught a nice break. I don't know that everybody gets that one. Okay, so that's Mel Reynolds today. This is just kind of a non sequitur, but it sort of ties into a bunch of things that are going on. Did you guys see that Tennessee voted to make the Bible the official book of the state?
That's why Standis is here.
He's a Southern boy.
Well, they voted, but I think the latest the governor vetoed the measure, right?
He did, yeah.
He did veto it. Okay,
still, but I mean, but the two legislative bodies there voted to make the Bible the official book of the state of Tennessee.
And they can easily override his veto. Apparently, it's just a simple majority in the legislature in Tennessee to override a veto.
Yeah, it's one of those overreaches. I mean, let's just say that.
Why would they do that? What's the
you know
point
why they do it? And this is where, you know, the world of real politics butts heads against common sense. This caters to the obvious constituency it's catering to, and their thinking is it's harmless. I'm not kidding.
Right.
I'm sincere, working in Alabama for all these years, they had another similar kind of issue coming forward, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and that was her explanation, was that look at the long picture, this is pretty much harmless, it doesn't mean anything, but it does capitulate to what is really a really strange...
Is that what it is? Is it to fight for votes? I mean,
yeah.
Is there...
Oh, yeah. They can go forward. There was a guy... Listen, but just before when I first moved to Alabama, there was a campaign commercial for a Democrat running for a Supreme Court, and it says, he'll rule by the book. And he slams the Bible on top of a book of law. And it's like, I'm thinking, oh, my God, I don't want that. I don't want...
You don't, but I mean, people in the South, people in the suburbs do.
It's a very interesting symbolic move to make the Bible your state book. But to put a veneer of secularism onto it, they start talking about the Bible as this historical document, and the Bible is an industry, and I guess they do a lot of printing of Bibles in Tennessee. And essentially, they're kind of... lowering and making taking this book that people think is holy and turning it into this sort of secular product.
Well, that was the governor's point too.
And the governor said, "Yeah, you're degrading this book by putting it in along with the you know the snail or whatever, all these other things that are state
symbols. State fungus.
Yeah, and but I think it's part of this larger culture war that's still being fought out there that we're seeing most of the battlefronts on it these days have to do with bathrooms. Right.
Oh gosh. Right.
Transgender people using bathrooms.
We are out of our mind talking about that in Minnesota. You know, they have big issue. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I'm sorry we're not on video here because I have that I will pass around to the gentleman here a photo I took last night at my children's high school.
All gender restroom.
Where of the sign up for their all gender restroom. Because right here in WGN.
What if I only have one?
And I did it because on GN yesterday, again, they were consumed by this idea that there would be some sort of spread of evil should a man and a woman share a bathroom or something like that. It's just amazing to me.
But you know,
here it is in my kid's high school, and it's like, who cares?
Wait a minute. It's a public restroom, Steve. You have the boys' room, the girls' room,
and then all gender.
And then that anybody can go in there, but it's one at a time in that restroom, correct? It's not
it's a single-use
single-use stall?
I think it used to be a girls' bathroom, as I recall, so it's probably bigger than
multiple
stalls.
Multiple.
I'm not positive on that, but I think it probably is. Yeah.
I mean, I think that they're able, then we've done this for years, actually, no one really acknowledging it, which is that we have men's bathrooms and women's bathrooms, and if you identify as a man, you go in the men's bathroom. You identify as a woman, you go in the women's bathroom, and there haven't been a lot of problems or any problems that I'm aware of that have resulted from this. It's just that now that we're formalizing it, people are getting very upset about it. I think part of it is that you have to sort of acknowledge, to make a law, you have to acknowledge that transgenderism is a real thing, and it's not just somebody's whim or kink. But it is actually an identity issue, and people are really, I think there's a vast swath of the public that really is uncomfortable just acknowledging that truth.
Yeah, well, go ahead. Keep going, Steve.
Well, just maybe the push is a little too hard on both sides, too. You know, maybe part of the transgender community could continue to operate the way they have and not demand all of this. And I hate when these words come out of my mouth because I did that a few weeks ago and Mark Baser almost killed me, but... You know, but maybe there is a little too much push on both sides, and we were all existing the way the status quo was a year or two ago, too.
In Minnesota, the case is being propelled by the parents of a child who is transgender or is transitioning. But here's the catch. The kid is 5.
Oh, good Lord.
He's a kindergartner. So this process began at the age of 4, and they say that they're... Oh, no, what is it? Their son, who identifies as female, gets bullied, and they don't like that, and so they want the school to accommodate them, and the school hasn't, and so now the issue's got rolling. Other families have jumped in.
Thank you. You just made the point I was trying to make, and you did it more eloquently.
Here's the thing, though. The governor said that the people – I'll just tell you about the Minnesota take on this. The governor of Minnesota said that those who are putting forward a bill to say that you will go to the bathroom that corresponds with your biology, that which you were born with, regardless of how you feel, dress, or identify, there's a bill in Minnesota that says you're going to go to the bathroom that matches the icon on the door, and the rest of that is, you know, and too bad for you if you're uncomfortable with that. The governor called that morally bankrupt. He said that's pandering to the base. You know, he had that kind of language for it, and I don't think that's fair to the people that are putting that legislation forward. Steve, you have a daughter. If she was in a locker room and another person in that locker room had an exposed penis,
yeah,
would you be comfortable with that for your daughter? And I wonder how your daughter would feel about that.
I think we'd all be healthier if we didn't care that much about it. So I hope that she could get over it and just deal with it and put her clothes on.
Isn't another option that, however uncomfortable that one transgender kid is, since it's making all of these other boys and girls uncomfortable, why does that person's comfort have to trump everybody else's?
Look, I got a headline for you. I don't think the kids in high school are that uncomfortable. I don't think they're uncomfortable about anything. And I don't want to, you know, talk too specifically, but there was I ran across a kid in a skirt not too long ago, and one of the kids I was with said, yeah, he wears skirts. You know, so what? They just deal with it. It's a different generation.
And in the situation you're talking about, John, you can also have a situation where someone who, if this girl, person who presents as a girl but has a penis, is in the boys' locker room? Is that going to, I mean, there's always going to be some levels of discomfort. And I think the way kids in high school have always handled these body issues that come up, you know, even before we even knew what transgenderism was people kind of dressed a little furtively, and they dressed off in corners, and sometimes they didn't shower after gym class. And
they never shower anymore.
That's true.
So it's not, I mean, I don't think that you have a lot of people with their genitals hanging out in any locker room anymore. And it's just one of those things that, I mean, I think you're right, that as we force the issue, it forces people to consider all kinds of scenarios. But Steve Chapman's column the other day talked about Buck Angel, I guess, is a porn star who is like a really butch-looking man but was born a woman and still has female parts. And so would you want Buck Angel in the women's bathroom? I don't know. It's like I think these people have sort of...
Say it one more time. What's his name?
Buck Angel.
Thank you.
I just love the course of these conversations.
Some of the great political thinkers in the state. And we've talked about penises how many times?
And I do think, though, I mean...
Every time. Every one of our conversations is involved in some sort of sexual oddity.
But I hadn't considered it. John, you asked the question about my daughter. And I really think, you know, that for my... I have a college girl and a high school senior boy. I don't think it would be that big of a... I think it's just a fact of life for them.
Okay, but here's what bothers me the most about them. Yeah, okay, well, I don't think we're coming at it from a hostile place. I mean, if you have to pick a side, and you pick the side, as I sort of have, that I think your gender should match the icon on the door, should match your biology, regardless of how you identify, none of this is perfect. And if I come to that conclusion, I don't think that makes me morally corrupt. Right. I mean, the sort of animosity that's being delivered at that side,
right,
I think is inappropriate.
You can be sincerely uncomfortable.
I can. Well, I know that it really maybe is an age thing. It's totally an age thing. Right. I'm 56. If I were 30 years younger, maybe I'd feel different about this, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. And that's where I come from. We haven't talked politics at all. Let's just do a quick whip around here. Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton had a debate last night on CNN. It was the most contentious the two of them have been, though they are still much more alike than they are unlike, say, the Republicans, of course. Any takeaways from the debate last night?
It was like a wrestling match. The audience was so into it.
I've never heard it. Brooklyn.
It was terrible. Couldn't watch it.
It was. It was almost Republican-esque.
We need to take the audience. I know. We need to. I was wondering, what would these things be like if the audience wasn't there? Because it's kind of gross.
I had the same thought. I think, why? Yeah. Let them applaud at the end.
It's a sport. It's not really a good way to pick a president.
And that's how they structure these things. Now I am going to sound like the old fart that I am. And that is, remember, they would instruct the audience not to respond.
Yeah, right.
And the rare times they did, it was like 1984 when Reagan said to Mondale, "You know, I won't, you know, make fun of, I won't use my opponent's relative youth and inexperience." And it was a funny moment, so that was a laugh. But that was the only time there was applause or laughter or anything. They were instructed, "Don't respond. You're here. You're passive viewers."
And I'm sure that will be the way for the general election. But you know what, really? And I stopped watching it last night because they weren't just cheering the answers; they were cheering the questions. You know, when they were.
I know.
When there
was
a question that was going to go after Hillary Clinton or go after Bernie, the other sides, people started cheering the question.
Cheering and cheering, yeah. It was like a wrestling match. If you turned it off, you missed, I think, Hillary Clinton not giving a adequate answer to this issue of the transcripts of the speeches that she gave to Goldman Sachs. They have been asking for the transcripts of these speeches over and over again for months now, and she keeps coming up with the strangest, lamest excuses for not disgorging these transcripts, which she does have.
What was
she said, "I'll disclose everything when everybody else
when
does.
That becomes
for paid speeches,
when that yeah. becomes the standard." And Bernie Sanders said, "Well, I'll give you the transcripts of all the speeches I've given to Goldman Sachs, which is zero."
But isn't there an issue with Sanders' tax returns? He hasn't
How
released
about
those.
That? That was phenomenal to me. So
my wife
she said,
does. I don't know what the hell's going on.
So Clinton, to try to deflect, she says, "Well, look, we have a standard where everyone releases their taxes. Why hasn't Senator Sanders released his taxes?" And Senator Sanders says, "Well, my wife does the taxes, and she's been on the road with me." What?
I will bet Scott's house in Alabama that there's nothing interesting. There is nothing interesting in Bernie Sanders.
Oh, I disagree. I suspect he's probably worth a heck of a lot more than he leads on. And
so what? What's the point of that?
Well, because if you're going to wail against the 1% and you are the 1%, then it begs a bit of hypocrisy.
Well, you know, that's a good point. Maybe that's true. But for me, just the ludicrous answer like, well, I can't do it because my wife is campaigning with me. That's not an excuse.
Yeah, send
you know what works against Hillary, too, and this is so artificial, but there it is. It's her delivery.
Oh, I was watching that
she
last
She drones,
night. Yeah.
And I don't, you know, you think Bill could, somebody needs to tell her that to go long and loud is ineffective for you. It doesn't work.
God, we had the exact same thought. I was watching this and last night and just saying, listen to this. And rather than raise the volume and, frankly, the shrillness, she doesn't have a great voice, and that just happens to be her biology of her vocal cords, not
On behalf
else.
Of Kristen Aquari, I will just ding you for that.
No.
That's all I'm saying. She's not here to do that, so I'm doing it on her behalf.
Okay. But my point is, as someone who grew up in a broadcasting home, my father was in television for decades, I would have done... ratchet it back half a volume, deliver it more soberly. He's going, you know, so, and it also makes the difference between those two much more stark. You have this guy, I think that you should blah, blah, blah. So you have crazy grandpa, and she could come and say, Bernie, what we need to do here really is there's a compromise. And she had some good moments talking about compromise.
But that gets us back to where we started. She couldn't speak in a normal voice last night. It wasn't the
they were shouting each other out.
Well, and the crowd.
And the
she
crowd,
had.
Yeah.
I mean, every time they started to be an answer, they were out shouting the crowd. It just wasn't possible.
Can I finish?
I mean, I get that.
Can I finish?
Yeah.
No,
can
you
I finish?
Hold on.
You
can
hold
I on. No, we're doing it. Well, nobody thinks that Paul Ryan's going to be the next president now, right? Despite Eric Zorn's exhortations.
Hear me out on this. He gave a very definitive statement that he is not interested.
Really.
He said, I'm not going to do it, period, full stop. But that is exactly what someone would say. It's exactly what you would say if you wanted to be the one who they turn to in their desperate hour in Cleveland in July.
Eric, it's exactly what he said when he said he didn't want to be Speaker of the House, said Speaker Ryan.
Not exactly, but close.
True. Right?
I mean, there is a sense that okay, if I really don't want this, but if you twist my arm, and he has to do that. If they're going to go to someone who's not Kasich, Cruz, or Trump, even if they go to someone who's not Cruz or Trump, that person can't be seen to have been trying to undermine the process.
It's looking more and more
like Tom Coburn for president.
What does that mean, Steve?
The former retired senator from Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, sure. What about that?
I think he wants to be drafted.
You want me to?
Seriously?
Well, you should have seen the eye roll Eric just gave.
I know. The fact that I said, who is that? I think it tells you all you need to know about
Dr.
his chances.
Tom Coburn.
No, here, and I've said this a million times. I'm going to keep saying it. If there's a brokered or a contested contest there in Cleveland, and it goes more than five ballots, Nikki Haley, governor of South Carolina, will be the nominee of the Republican Party.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
She'll be Tom Coburn's running mate.
No. Think about this. She takes away the history. You know, it's history away from Hillary like that. She's a Tea Party without being nuts. She's just won re-election a few years ago with 64% of the vote.
And she got on the right side of the Confederate battle flag.
Yeah,
she did. She stood
smart,
up on that. Who did she endorse? She's
Rubio. She was with Rubio in the primary.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's
and
right.
And Carly Fiorina will be furious.
Why is that?
I think she tried to position herself as the female possibility.
She was dreadful.
But, you know what? I was the Rubio guy in the bunch, and obviously I'm not going to win that one now, but now I'm thinking it's Ted Cruz. I saw him on TV yesterday. He didn't have a tie on. He'd use less hair product. He was on with one of the late-night talk shows. He was doing some good shtick about Trump, and then his daughters and his wife were on that little town hall meeting they had, and his daughters were adorable, and I thought,
they weren't recoiling from his embrace.
My daughter does that to me. I give him that.
Yeah. Have you seen the meme going around, though? They say the difference between the crazy stuff that Cruz says and Trump says is that Cruz believes what he's saying.
Yeah, I think Cruz is scarier. And I don't think Cruz is that much more attractive a general election candidate than
Trump. Oh, he's terrible.
Trump.
I mean, seriously, he would track terribly.
All right, so I want you guys to look up Tom Coburn, learn about him.
Yeah, fine.
I remember Coburn.
This is the part where we ask the gang to make one recommendation of something they've been listening to, watching, reading, maybe surfing. Eric does a lot of podcasting. Podcast listening. Scott Stantis, let's start with you as our featured guest today. Is there anything that you want to share as a recommendation today?
Yes, I just finished a graphic novel. It's new to me. It's been out for a while. It's a New York Times bestseller called Stitches. And I don't have the author's name in front of me because God, if only I had a handheld device where I could look these things up. but it's a terrific graphic novel. You ought to read it. It's beautifully done. The guy is a magnificent artist. He tells this really interesting story of a kid growing up in a very tough situation. And the last couple of scenes are just wrenching and wonderful. And it's read it. please.
Well, that from an editorial cartoonist is an endorsement.
Oh, absolutely.
How about Steve Bertrand? What are you liking this week, Steve?
You know, there's a PBS series that came back, or it's a BBC series, I think, called Grandchester. And my wife and I have started watching it. I think they're in the second season now. But it's this young Episcopal priest in some rural English town set post-World War II. And he fancies himself a sleuth. Sounds like every other BBC show. But anyway, you know, he's got a buddy who's a cop, and they go around. But it's an interesting sort of examination of this guy who's, you know, not committed to celibacy, but he happens to be single as his village tries to set him up. Good-looking guy with a little murder mystery in between. Grandchester is a show I like a lot.
I'll go next, and then, Eric, you go last. The book that I'm going to recommend is one I mentioned last week but didn't say very much about it. I had two recommendations. I'll repeat one of them this week. It's a book called Consequence by Eric Fair. He was one of the interrogators at Abu Ghraib, and he describes not so much the torture per se, although he participated in it, and feels that he almost can't be redeemed for it either. He's a religious man, and it haunts him to this day. The book wasn't even cathartic. He just feels like he has to share what they did, why they did it, and how well it did and did not work. And the book, if you've ever wondered, what was it like behind those walls? Here's one of the guys doing it saying, this was our experience. The book is called Consequence. It just came out by Eric Fair. How about you, Eric Zorn?
Well, I want to say that I've heard a lot about the book, The Arm, inside the...
Sure.
You were recommending last week. Also, I looked up the author of Scott's book. It's David Small.
Thank you.
And my recommendation is me, as someone who can find things out for you. What I'm recommending is something...
Chicago.
Google, the search engine. Last week, there was in the Sunday paper, I think there was this little article recommending something called the Shinji Moru accessory pouch for phones. And you guys have probably all seen these, and I'm holding it up here. No one can see it except the studio. But it's a little thing that sticks on the back of your phone, and you can stick a credit card or an ID card in the back of it. And I got it. I saw it. I ordered it, and it's like changed my life. I love carrying the bike because my phone is with me. I put my wallet down various places. I lose it. But my phone is always with me in this little pouch with the little cards that I always use in it. Just a perfect thing.
It's adorable.
It costs like $4.
I can get you a little WGN phone wallet that Kristen Decker is displaying right now.
She does have one of those, yes.
Those little, they're great. Can I get one as
just a normal person?
No, hey, you have to be your sixth time.
You have to be Eric Zorn.
You have to have won 8 states.
Room rule 12.
That's Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis, and Steve Bertrand. Thank you very much, Bob Ferguson, our engineer and our producer, / Carol Merrill model is Kristen Decker. We are the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pot on you next week.
You little rascal, you. You little rascal, you. You little rascal, you.